All right, so I just want to say real quick that Joe has been very influential in my life. He worked with me for a very long time through the steps, watched me come in and out, never judged me, and it was a huge impact in my life, you know. And it gives me great pleasure to introduce our speaker for this evening from Orchid, Joel K.
My name's Joe. I'm an alcoholic.
What time do I go till?
45 minutes.
So like 8 o'clock, right?
Yeah,
8 o'clock. Yeah. Joe, alcoholic. Let's see. My sobriety date is 12/30/96. So I've got a little over 22 years of sobriety. And I know I don't look that old. I got here when I was like 4. No. It's funny. You know, I'm looking at around the rooms and I'm almost becoming one of the old timers around here, and it's kind of scary. I mean, there's some people here with more time than me, but it's like I look around and I sit in the room sometimes and it's scary. It's like, dang, what do I do now? Thank God Billy comes to a lot of the same meetings, you know? But let's see, my sponsor is Daryl, Painter Daryl. And a lot of you guys know that he's in the hospital. I just text him right now and let him know that I was speaking tonight and to thank him for all that he's done for me, you know, and let him know that I really appreciate him and that I'm praying for him. And I would hope that all you guys would pray for him too this evening, you know, just give him a word. And he texts me back, thanks, just tell the truth. He's feeling real sentimental. Just tell the truth. Guy. My home group is the Thursday night 8 p.m. Meeting right here at this club, and Kevin is the secretary, but I'd come anyway, you know what I mean? It's a great meeting, and Kevin does a great job. Kevin came to this fellowship, and you got a couple years now, buddy? A couple years, and like for the first, I don't know, eight months, we would be at the Thursday night meeting and he wouldn't say anything. He didn't say anything in any meeting I saw him in. And then one night I was leading the meeting and I said, I picked on Kevin and he said, I'm just gonna listen. I said, why don't you just tell us where you're at? Boom, 10 minutes. And he hasn't stopped since. So I absolutely love Kevin. And if you come to that Thursday night meeting, I have the privilege of working with Joe and with Eddie. And Joe will be washing the coffee cups after the meeting, and Eddie will be wiping down the tables because they were taught service just like I was taught service. And they were brought into service just like I was. I went up to Joe and I said, hey, after this meeting, every night, every Thursday night for the next year, you're going to wash coffee cups. And he was like, whatever. I told Eddie, after this meeting, you're going to wipe down tables for the next year. And he's like, all right, okay. And I told Eddie, I said, Eddie, while you're wiping down the tables, you're going to be doing something for someone else, and you're not going to be thinking about yourself. You know what he said to me? Yeah, I'm going to be thinking about how much I hate my sponsor. I freaking love these guys. You know what I mean? They're just saving me. They're saving me. You know, there's a lot of people in here that I really, really care about. Joseph, Vincent, you know, Glenn, you guys, my core, Andrew, my core guys, you know, all of you guys. I don't want to just name certain people because there's a lot of people, you know, that I truly love. You know, some of you I don't know, but I'm glad you're here. If you're new, don't base Alcoholics Anonymous off what I say tonight. Please come back and, you know, give it a try a couple times because you might think after this, like, I don't want nothing that guy has. You know what I mean? So I'll just tell you a little bit about myself. I was born and raised in and down in Long Beach, grew up in Lakewood, California, down south. My mom and my dad were married, had me and a brother, okay? Then my mom and my real father divorced, and my real father OD'd and died at 24 years old. I never knew him. So my mom gets remarried, and what does she do? She marries a heroin addict, which became my stepdad, which raised me my whole life, and that's who that is right here. That's his picture right here. So he adopted my brother and I, and then my mom and him. I have a younger brother and younger sister. Obviously we're steps, but we've never felt that way. So my mom's white, my dad was Japanese. Here's me and my brother are half Mexican, half white, and my younger sister and brother are half Japanese and half white. And you're like, dang, that's a drinking story starting right there, you know what I mean? So my last name is Kawamura, and that's Japanese, because my dad adopted me. People all say, oh, is that Hawaiian? I'll say, no, it's Japanese, they don't get it. You know, it's a long story, I'm not gonna even tell you, or I'll say it's Japanese, and they'll say, you kind of look Japanese. And I'm like, what are you talking about? I'm not even. So that, just that little story right there in itself can describe my childhood. It was freaking crazy. I come from a crazy family. My mom drank alcoholically. My dad drank alcoholically and used drugs as I was growing up. And they both stopped. When I turned 17, they both stopped. But by then, so much stuff had gone on in my family. My brothers and my sister and I, we all played sports. I played youth football, baseball. My dad was a coach. My mom was a team mom. You know, we had the whole nine yards going on. You know, we grew up playing sports, and I'll let you know I was horrible at it, but I did it anyway. I had a lot of fun. You know, but there was a lot of insanity, a lot of late night parties at my parents' house, the police coming, you know, stuff like that going on. I went to school. I didn't like school. It was not my favorite thing to do. I'll tell you, when I got sober, I was 32 years old. I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm jumping forward a little bit, but I'll get back to that. Came to Alcoholics Anonymous at 32 years old, and I had had a daughter by this time that was getting close to graduating high school. She was in like 10th grade. And so I thought, I had to go and get my high school diploma. So I went to Delta Adult Night School and took two freaking classes. I just quit high school. I had two classes left. Got my high school diploma and walked on stage from Delta. And so you can do anything in sobriety. You know what I mean? But so we grew up in this kind of a crazy house, and my dad and my uncle had a gardening business. So when I got old enough to start working with them, that's what I did. You know, I'd work my summers with my dad, and I had my first drink when I was 12 years old. My cousin and I stole some beers from our dads. And I drank, my first drink was, I drank two Schlitz malt liquor tall boys at 12 years old. I don't know, man. I'm like, I got to keep doing this because I felt good. I was dialed in. I was calm. There was no voices talking. You know what I mean? I wasn't uncomfortable. I was really, really comfortable. So I had that first drink at 12, and I didn't start drinking every day from that, but I did start drinking from there. I didn't start drinking every day till I was about 15, you know, and then I was daily drinking, you know, and just catching a buzz, you know, and stuff like that. So I started the drinking, and then, you know, I experimented with a lot of drugs. This is Alcoholics Anonymous, right? And I respect their traditions, and I was taught to do that. But I'm sharing, so I'll talk a little bit about drugs. But in a normal AA meeting, you won't hear me talking about drugs because I respect the traditions. You'll hear me talking about alcohol. If I was in an NA meeting, you'll hear me talking about drugs and not alcohol. And that's what I was taught. I came in here when I was new, and I raised and said, I'm an alcoholic addict. And my sponsor says, if you say that again, I want you to put $2 in the basket. You're going to respect the traditions here. That's how it was, you know, and so that's how I've been, you know, and that's what I try to teach my guys too. And another thing while I'm on that subject is you very rarely, if ever, will you hear a cuss word come out of my mouth, because I was taught that early on. Now, outside of these rooms, you'll hear it maybe, but inside of these rooms when I'm sharing, I don't do that. I try not to do that. Because my sponsor told me at one time, do you talk in front of your wife and your kids like that? Then don't do it in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I was like, okay, whatever. Whatever. He's always telling me all this Shit. Daryl wasn't my original sponsor. Okay? So I'll get to that in a while. So I grew up, you know, crazy. My childhood, I had a daughter with my high school sweetheart. So I have a daughter that is 35 years old, okay, and I'm 54. So I had her at 18 years old, and we wanted to have a kid. I don't know where my parents were or what they were doing, but they weren't saying, hey, you know, most people don't have kids at this young age. They go to college and all that. I don't know where that was. But we decided we want to have a baby, and we have a baby. And I love this freaking, this kid. She's amazing. Right now she's struggling. She's getting ready to go through a divorce. And yeah, and it's tough. And she's got two kids. And I get to be there for her right now. And we're freaking so tight. It's just amazing, you know. And prior to Alcoholics Anonymous, our relationship wasn't quite like that. Because when I was drinking and using, I wasn't available for anybody but myself, you know. So we have this baby, and then we decide things aren't working out. We're young, we part ways, you know. But I try to be the best father I can, you know. I'm spending as much time as I can with my daughter, but I'm still under the influence. Whenever I get a chance, you know, I'm waking up on the weekends taking a drink, you know. I'm drinking at school, you know, the whole nine yards. You know, I've got a serious problem, you know, And meanwhile, there's all this stuff going on at my house with my parents. You know, my dad's gone and he's out in the streets and my mom's chasing him. And it's dysfunction. It's totally crazy. You know, and it's so crazy because I think about it. My family is so it's changed. It's totally changed now, the dynamic. It's crazy. But my family was so dysfunctional, but there was still a lot of love in the house. We still told each other, I love you. I love you. And I don't know what that's about. You know, I'm out here killing myself with drugs and alcohol, but we love you. We always, you know, it was always said and stuff. So I'm going on and I have this baby and then I get, I'm getting in a little bit of trouble. Long Beach is a pretty big city, right? And the police decide that it'd probably be a good idea for me to move out of Long Beach. And I'm like, what the hell? This place is huge. How do you even know my name? I remember being in the park one time and my daughter, the cops come walking up. There's 20 of us there. And they're like, hey, Mr. Calamura, can we talk to you? And my daughter's mom says, how do they know your name? You know, and it's just like, that's it. Here I go, trip down to the jail. I'm gonna go spend the night down there. You know, I didn't do a lot of jail, but I got in a lot of trouble. And back then it was a different time. I get picked up for a DUI. And they'd find a little bit of weed and they'd say, okay, what you're going to do is you're going to drive that car straight home because I know where you live. You know what I mean? And I'd hop in my car and I'd drive home drunk, you know, but today it's not like that, obviously. You know, they want all your money. They're going to make you lose your job. You know, you're going to do all the schools and all of that stuff, you know? So it was pretty crazy. I'm down there in Long Beach. So they say, you know, you should probably move. So I decide, I get with this girl and we move to Marina Del Rey. You know, I meet this girl, man, she's got a beautiful pad right on the beach, Marina Del Rey, I'm loving it, life's good. And I start getting in trouble down there, you know, cause that's what I do. When I drink, man, I've got no off switch. I never ever know what's gonna happen or where I'm gonna be, what I'm gonna do. You know, so I moved to Marina Del Rey and she's like, hey, you know what, I'm gonna move. You know what I mean? She's like, I'm taking a different job and I'm going to move. Do you want to go with me? And I'm like, I'm down. No lie. She comes home and tells me that one night. And I'm like, okay, let's go. So I'll pack my stuff, my two suitcases that I came here with, that I carried with me until I got to AA, two suitcases of clothes all the time. She says, I'm going to move. Do you want to go? And I said, hell yeah, let's go. So I packed my two suitcases and all her nice stuff into a U-Haul. I didn't even ask her where we're going. I'm drunk. I'm loaded, man. I was loaded that night. And I take off driving a U-Haul. So I come to the next morning. I had moved to Lompoc. Yeah. And I'm not even going to cap. I'm not tripping on Lompoc. It was just a lot different than Long Beach. I get up the next morning, I am hung over, and I'm like, well, I might as well go check this place out. So I take a drive and I go down, I think it's whatever the 8th Street or whatever. Yeah, the, and I drive and I get to like the end. And there's like mountains and shit. And I'm like, where am I? Because I grew up in the city. It's building after building after building. And I'm like, what the heck, man? So I'm like, okay, well, this is what I'm doing now. So right, that day we're unpacking, I meet the next door neighbor. We're drunk out at the pool that afternoon. And those two guys, there's two brothers that live there, became my drinking buddies forever. I mean, until I quit, you know what I mean? They became my drinking buddies, and that's what we did. And I hung with them for years. So I moved to Lompoc, and things are going okay for about 8 months, and then I get a DUI. You know, I get a DUI, and I'm just like, are you kidding me? I'm like, the cops hate me. It's not that I'm breaking the law and drinking and driving everywhere I'm going. It's like, the cops hate me. You know, but that's not the case. It's just me. It's just me. So I end up in jail, and I get a DUI, and they sentence me to AA as part of the deal. So I go into AA. I was 22 at the time, and I'm like, oh, my God. There's no one there under 100. There is just, like, all these old... And I'm like, I don't even relate to this shit. You know what I mean? I can't relate. I'm not hearing nothing. So I would drive home from work. I was working in... I got a job in Santa Maria. Drive home from work, and I drink two tall boys, go home, shower, do the mouthwash thing, and then go sit in my DUI class. Like, you know, and I did that until I was done doing that, you know. And this lady decided that she wanted to, she'd like to get married and have kids. She was 9 years older than me, and I'm thinking, I can't, man, I can barely handle myself, and I've already got a daughter. I can't do this. She's a respectable lady from a respectable family. You know, and I'm like, I can't do this, you know, so I'm out. So I get my two suitcases and I take off, you know, and I do that. I move up to Oceano and I'm liking it there, and I meet a lady there, and we hang out for about a year, and we get married. Horrible idea. I'm drinking the whole time. By this time, my drinking is so far advanced. You know, she says to me, you might be an alcoholic. And I'm like, oh, how about if I go to AA? And she says, yeah, maybe you should. So in the early 90s, I came to AA for like 43 days. I didn't drink. Came to AA. But as soon as I got in that parking lot, man, I freaking fired one up. 43 days later, I'm like, my buddy that was my drinking buddy from Lompoc, we got 43 days together. We're driving home from here, and it's like, I'm like, I'm thirsty. And he said, me too. I said, I'm done. Are you done? He said, I'm done. We whipped into the liquor store, and I drank for another 7 years until I finally made it back to Alcoholics Anonymous. Yeah. Yeah, and I was thoroughly beat down, on the verge of insanity, you know, and it was crazy. It was crazy. So we didn't last long. We got a divorce. She said, I've had enough of you. And I'm thinking, well, I've had enough of me too, but you know, I can't divorce me. So I take my two suitcases and tell her, I'm out of here, I'll show you. Get in my car with my two suitcases, and I kid you not, I drive three houses down the street to my buddies from Lompoc that moved over there too. Boom, in their driveway. And yeah, I'll show you. So I'm over there, you know, and I'm really struggling, man. My drinking is out of control. And I get through that divorce, and I meet the lady that I'm married to now. I meet her, and things are going pretty good. I'm drinking a little bit. And it's not too bad in the beginning. You know, young love, new love. Oh, we'll just party. You know? She's like, oh, do you want to get a drink? And I'm like, oh, sure, why not? You know what I mean? Like that. Pretty soon, 3 years into this relationship, it's in shambles. I'm sitting there, my sobriety date, you know, is 12/30/96. I could not even make one more day to New Year's Eve to party. I could not do it. I was so freaking done. I'm by myself. I'm barely hanging on to this job that I got. I've got no food in my fridge. I've got no car insurance, no gas in my car. And I'm making pretty good money at the job I'm working on. I'm the guy that gets paid on Friday, and on Monday I'm broke. By Wednesday, I'm jealous of the guy buying a dollar cheeseburger. You know what I mean? I am. I'm freaking jealous. You know, and while all this is going on with me, my one buddy from Lompoc, he decides to get sober. Some of you, you may remember him, Daryl, Debbie. He gets sober, and I'm watching his life change while mine's steadily going down the crapper. I'm watching his life change. It's getting better and better and better, you know, and I'm like, dang, he has a key to my house. So he comes over and says, how you doing? Checks on me, how you doing? Never preaches AA to me. I'm just watching his life get better. So I got here by attraction rather than promotion, because he never preached Alcoholics Anonymous to me, you know? And so I watched his life getting better and better and better. And I call him up on a Sunday and say, hey, I want to go to AA with you on Monday night. No, I said, it was Sunday. I said, I want to go to AA with you. And he says, well, I'll pick you up tonight. And I said, dude, I've already drank and did some other stuff, so I'll go with you tomorrow. And he said, okay, I'll call you tomorrow. He's probably thinking, oh, I've heard that five gazillion. Talk to you tomorrow. You know what I mean? And I kid you not, he got off work and he called me. And I went to my first Alcoholics Anonymous meeting that I really, I want to say wanted to go to, needed to go to. Because I didn't really want to, but I needed some kind of a change. Because like I said, I was on the verge of insanity. I can do jail, you know, and I can even do death at that point. But I'm deathly afraid of getting locked up in the nut ward, because I'm so freaking crazy up here. There's so much stuff going on. You know, I'm just afraid they're going to lock me up and, you know, throw away the key. And I deserve it. You know, I definitely deserve it. So he picks me up and brings me to the 8 o'clock airport meeting. I'm sitting in that meeting. The whole meeting, all I thought is, I can never drink again. My life is over. Dude, I'm on the verge of insanity the day before. Killing myself is an option. And tonight I'm like, God, I can never drink again. Alcoholics are funny people, huh? It's like, my life is over. So that's all I did that whole meeting. I sat there and I thought, man, I can't do this. You know, I don't know if I can, my whole life. So luckily, an old timer, Mark O, comes up to me after the meeting, gives me a big book, and says, I want you to read this. And I said, okay. You know, I had no idea what I was doing here or what you guys were even doing. And he says, I want you to read this. And I said, okay, I will. And he said, do you believe in God? And I said, yeah. I had this distorted perception of God because I'd went to church as a kid, and by 17, I knew I'm going to hell. So I could turn my back on that shit. You know, I'm going to hell. I already know that. So he says, do you believe in God? And I said, yeah. And he says, I want you to pray. And I said, for what? And he said, for another day of sobriety. And I'm like, okay. And he said, we do this one day at a time. And I'm thinking, okay, I can wrap my head around that. Because thinking about the rest of my life, dude, I'm 22 years of sober, and I still get out there. You know, I can spend 2 hours on something that ain't even happened yet, and it's never going to happen. And I know it. You know what I mean? I know it. But, man, it's freaking crazy. So I get that big book, and I kid you not, it's New Year's Eve. It's New Year's Eve, and I have a cell phone, and I still had a house phone. So I turn my cell phone off, and I take my house phone off the receiver. I sit in the very back of my house with all the lights off and a flashlight, and I read the big book. Because I'm so afraid someone's going to knock at the door or call me, and it's New Year's Eve, and I'm going to have to drink. And I freaking made it through the night. I read that book. I read the same page 20 times because I couldn't even focus. I read that book like 3 times before I even, about the fourth time, I finally figured out what it was saying a little bit, you know, because I just was so scrambled, you know. So I come into Alcoholics Anonymous, and prior to this, I had kind of met a guy through my buddy that I wanted to ask to be my sponsor. So I asked this guy if he'll be my sponsor, and I'm petrified. I got to ask this guy to be my sponsor. If you're new, there's nothing to be afraid of. I don't know why I was so afraid. Maybe it was the thinking that I have to ask someone to help me. So that means I'm weak. I'm you know, I'm scared, I'm full of fear, you know, but I asked this guy to help me, and he says, yeah, absolutely. And this guy, I picked this guy to help me, and I'll tell you what he had going on. He has no legs, he's in a wheelchair. He had like 12 years of sobriety at that time. He's going through a divorce, a hellacious divorce, and he has a smile on his face. And he's at Alcoholics Anonymous every night. And I ask him to be my sponsor. And I go and I start working with him. And through that whole time, I didn't even know he was going through a divorce until we started working together, you know, and started getting to know each other. He never said a bad word about her, you know, or anything. He just went through this thing with grace and dignity, you know, and I thought, that's what I want. He had a lot of neat outside stuff, but I wanted what that man had inside. Because I was so jumbled up and, you know, I didn't know what I wanted. I thought all that outside stuff would fix me, like all of us do. Like I still think at times, well, if I got three of those, man, I'll be good. You know, when I get three of those and I'm still stuck with me, you know. So I asked this guy to be my sponsor, and he starts telling me all that stuff that I tell these guys that they freaking probably hate. You know, like, we're going to start reading this book. He sat down and he read that book with me. We're going to start working these steps. And you're going to get a God working in your life, you know. And he tells me stuff like, if you want what I have, do what I do. You know, he starts teaching me about my etiquette in meetings. I don't want you cross-talking. I don't want you on your phone. I don't want you walking out in the middle of the meeting to go to the bathroom to have a cigarette. I want you to stay in there and pay attention and listen to people when they're sharing. You know, and stuff like that. He taught me to respect the program. You know, and today I have the utmost respect for Alcoholics Anonymous because you guys have given me this freaking amazing life. You know what I mean? So we get down to working the steps. So we get to step one, powerless over alcohol, my life's unmanageable. I'm like, I write on my paper, yeah, I'm powerless over alcohol. Yeah, I got to drink every day. I can't stop. I can't put it down. It's killing me. I can't put it down. And then on unmanageable, I'm like, well, I still have a car and, yeah, a job and a place to live. And I'm in somewhat of a relationship. So I didn't even write nothing. So I go to sit down at him, and he just is shaking his head at me. And he turns that paper over and he says, here, I'm going to help you with your unmanageability. He says, how's that job going? I said, well, I'm barely hanging on. Job. How's that relationship? Oh, she freaking hates me right now. Relationship. Yeah. How's that house? Well, I'm barely making rent. You know what I mean? And he had like 10 things written down on there. And he said, here, go work on it. And we'll do it again. You know? And I'm like, okay. So, you know, and that's how, that freaking guy loved me, but he was hard on me. Because I needed him. He needed to be hard on me. You know, he needed to be hard on me. I work with a lot of different guys, and I have over the years, and some you just got to tell them like it is, and some you don't have to. They just jump right in. And I'm not the guy, this is life or death for me. And I'm not going to freaking risk your life by not being honest to you and telling you, you need to get your head out of your, you know what, and do something. You know what I mean? So we get to, we're going through the steps, we get to step two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Oh, I definitely knew I was insane. There was no doubt about it. There was no doubt about it. And we started talking a little bit about the God thing. You know, we get to step three, you know, and in step two, I ask him, explain your conception of God to me. And he says, this is exactly what he said. He said, my God has a beard down to here. He rides a Harley Davidson and he loves me no matter what. And I'm like, frickin', I can get down with that. Because my God already at 17 years old, I was going to hell and it was over. You know, so I started reading that book and we started talking about God. And then I made that decision to turn my will and my life over to God. Now I said that and I did that, not knowing exactly what that meant and not knowing that I'm thinking, okay, I just do that and it's all good. That's not how it works. I'm still today trying to understand my God and turning my will and my life over to him on a daily basis. And it's a struggle because then some days I'm so stuck on self, you know, and not every day, and it's gotten better, but, you know, a lot of the time. So we start, so we do that, and then we get to this inventory on step four, you know, and I hear a lot of people say they're afraid of it. My sponsor just didn't even give me a chance. This is what you need to write, four column inventory, just like it's written in the big book. I want you to take it, do it, and I'm going to give you 2 weeks and not a day longer. And I want it done. And I'm like, okay, whatever. You know, meanwhile, I love this story because it's the truth. I call him up because he wants me to, you're going to call me every day for 90 days and you're going to go to a meeting every day for 90 days. And if you miss, you're going to start over. Yeah. And I'm like, now I say 30 days just to hoping that they'll make 30. You know what I mean? So I do, I'm doing the 90 and 90 and I'm trying to, you know, feel it's all changing because I'm sober and I don't know how to feel and I don't know what's going on and I'm sensitive and I'm mad and all this. And I'll call him up and I'll be all upset. And he'll just simply say, hey, read page 449 in the big book, and he'll hang up the phone on me. You know? Yeah. It's 417 for the other. And I hated when they changed that. You know what I mean? But yeah, and it's on acceptance and they change the page number. What the heck? You know? So he'd say that. I'll read 449, click. 449, click. It took me, I don't know, 6 months to figure out. Maybe I'll read this before I call him. You know what I mean? Maybe I'll try that. You know? It's hard. It's hard coming from insanity and then trying to be sane, because all I ever knew was insanity, you know? So we get to that fourth step and I do it, and what we figure out in the fourth step is he has me write that fourth column, my part, you know? And that's where it begins. That's when that freaking growing begins, you know? Because I played the victim my whole life. They did this to me. The cops did this to me. Everybody did it to me, you know? And I get to that fourth part, that fourth column, and he says, okay, what's your part? Dang, and I had to take a long, hard look at myself, and I learned a lot of stuff about myself. You know, there's some things that happen to people in life that isn't always your fault. You know what I mean? You know, and that's for you and your sponsor to talk about and work out. There's things, you know, kids are victimized and stuff like that, and that's not always all our fault. I'm not saying that, you know, but a lot of the stuff I have a huge part in. I step on the toes of my fellows and they retaliate, right? You know what I mean? And I've done that my whole life, trying to get my way, what I want, what I need. And so I learned a lot about myself, and I get done with that step and you know, with four and five, and he says, you're done. You can no longer play the victim. And I'm like, what the heck? That's one of my best weapons. You know what I mean? That's one of my best things. You know, if I can get you to feel a little sorry for me, I can get anything out of you. You know, but he says, you can no longer play the victim. And I'm like, okay. Six and seven, short character defects and shortcomings. Man, I'm just like the rest of you guys. We got them. I had to identify them. And I pray about them to be removed. You know, the biggest lesson that I got from my sponsor on six and seven is that I'm always going to have my character defects and my shortcomings, but the best that I can hope for is they don't dominate me on a daily basis. And that's what I found today, you know, because I can be working on something, but something over here is popping up. Something over here is popping up, you know. We talk about it a lot. You know, all of us have our struggles, you know, and I just pray. I just pray on most days I'm walking in with God and not being that person. And it's been pretty good for me, but I'm definitely not perfect. You know what I mean? That's another thing I want to say real quick is, like, just because I'm standing up here in a shirt and a tie, I am just an alcoholic trying to get another day. I am no better than you, but I'm also no less than you. And I learned that here. I'm just an alcoholic trying to get another day, you know, and that's not what this is about. I have a lot of experience for being here for a long time, you know, and I can help you, but I can also tell you what not to do. There's some things I can tell you, definitely do not do this, because this is exactly what will happen, because I've done that. You know what I mean? I don't know why we just don't come in here and want to learn, right? Let me try this. They told me not to do it, but I'm going to go ahead and do it. You know, now my whole life's in shambles, but, you know. So we get to eight, you know, and I made a list of persons that I had harmed. And that was awesome because I made this big old long list. And my sponsor sits down with me and says, all right, well, you can't go to these two drug dealers and make amends. You know, you're going to have to, that's not, you know, you rip off drug dealers. You don't go over there and say, hey, I'm sorry, I took your drugs. And you know what I mean? And there were some places that, God, I hate to even say this, that we had robbed that were like no longer in business anymore. You know, so I had to find some other ways. But we worked through this list and I made some amends. You know, I made the amends with my parents. By this time, my mom and my dad had both quit drinking and using. They don't do AA or NA or anything, but they had stopped. And I don't know, I asked my mom one time how that happened, and she said, well, when you were about 17, I was getting up at 5 o'clock to go to work in the morning, and I was in the kitchen mixing myself a drink. And she thought, I can't do this anymore. So she was there at 5 o'clock in the morning before work mixing a drink. And she poured it out, she was done. You know what I mean? And they both had quit, you know, when I was 17, but I still went on until I was 32, you know, but I was able to go and sit and make amends with them. And they're like, oh no, you're fine. And I'm like, no. I need to really break this down to you and tell you what's been going on. And, you know, because they sat and worried about me, you know, evenings, nights, days at a time. Where's this kid at? What's going on? Are we going to get that call? Are we going to get that call? Because when you're running around like I am down there in that, with the drugs and the alcohol, you know, down in Long Beach and doing a lot of, you never know what's going to happen. Any day could be your last day. You never know. You know, so I did my amends. My biggest amends was that ex-wife that I was married to. My sponsor, he said, I get all through my stuff. And he said, weren't you married? And I said, yeah. He said, did you make amends to your ex-wife? And I said, no, I'm not going to do it. And he said, well, then drink. He said, do it or drink. I don't care. I'm like, okay. So I go and I meet my ex-wife and I make an amends. And I'm sitting there talking to her, and inside of my head, I'm thinking, kill her, kill her, kill her. But my words are, I'm sorry, I did it. It was wrong. I shouldn't have done it. It won't happen again. Is there anything I can do to repair this relationship? And she sat there going, yeah, you did. Yep, it was all you. And I'm just, but that is not my business. My business is right here. So I make the amends begrudgingly. Taking the action that I don't agree with is going to be the one that's going to save me. So I go and I do that. And I walk away from that house and I feel a freedom like you would not believe. That was my last one on my ninth step. People say they get this freedom from the fourth. Mine was at the end of the ninth when I made that amends. I felt free. I was free. So we got down to 10. That's a daily thing for me. That's where I'm at right now. Daryl and I have started reworking the steps, and I'm at 10 right now. And that's what I'm doing, and I'll be doing that until he gets home. You know, I have to, I have to take my personal inventory, not yours, mine. You know, and when I'm wrong, I have to promptly admit it. And my sponsor taught me, that doesn't mean that I get to treat you like crap. He said, carry a 10th step in your back pocket. I don't get to treat you like crap and then go, oh, hey, I'm sorry. That's not how it works. I need to change the action. You know, so that's where I'm at today. Working on that. Step 11, my favorite step, where I'm at all the time. Sought through prayer and meditation. Seek. I'm seeking God on a daily basis. And that's where I'm at, and that's what I'm trying to do today, is seek God on a daily basis. You know, and that's been a whole, from the guy that was going to hell, from that fire and brimstone God, it's changed dramatically. And I'm in prayer a lot of the time. And I've even started reading some of the Christian literature, which is so not me. I quite haven't stepped back into the church yet, you know, but I don't know what's going to happen. But I'm trying to build that relationship. You know, and Daryl tells me, you have to, it's like any other relationship, you have to put time in that. You know what I mean? And then step 12, I just suit up and show up. I've had a spiritual awakening as a result of working these steps. I wasn't one of the ones that came in, went to AA and boom, got it. You know, it's all good. It took me a make amends to your ex-wife, bullshit. I fought it the whole way, you know, and then it came. And then for me today, I'm just trying to, I do my best to try and carry the message to other alcoholics, you know, and try desperately to practice these principles in all of my affairs. But I'm a flawed human being. I'm a human being. Let's just say that. So I have to work on it and be aware of it on a daily basis. You know what I mean? And it takes work. One of the biggest things I'm grateful for is that 22 years of sobriety, I still love coming to Alcoholics Anonymous. I love you people. I love what you've done for me, what you've taught me. You know what I mean? I've seen so much. You guys, you have to just stick around here just to see what goes on here. It's freaking amazing. I've seen it all. From happy to sad. You know what I mean? I've watched, you know, you guys taking your 5-year cakes tonight. Freaking amazing. I love it. I love it. People coming in that won't say a word in a meeting, to won't shut up. I love it. You know what I mean? That's what I love today. You know, and I get to be a part of that. You know, I truly do. I'm just so grateful. So let me get back to, how much time do I got?
30 more minutes.
No. About five. So my dad, so I've been through a lot of stuff, you know, and you guys, I've watched you guys walk through stuff and I've walked through stuff. So 2008, my father passed away and he and I had built this relationship, you know, and it was devastating to me. It was this man, no matter how jacked up our childhood was, he was always there, took us to our games, even if we also got to watch him go to jail, get arrested, you know, the whole, all of it. But there was always a lot of love, you know, our family for some reason. Insane family. I used to think my family was insane, and then I met some other people's families, and I'm like, maybe we're not so bad after all, you know? But you know, my dad got sick, and I don't know if it's because of the way he lived his life as a youngster, but he died at 60 years old in 2008. He had his body had shut down, you know, COPD, his heart and his lungs. I remember my mom called me and she said, you need to, because he had been in and out of the hospital, and she said, you need to come down here. So I jammed down there and my dad's in the hospital and I spend the day with him, and then I'm there the next day and I walk in the room and my mom and my dad are there and there was some other lady there, and I'm like, oh, okay. So I turn to walk out and they're like, no, come here. I'm the oldest of the four kids. Who this lady is the hospice lady. And she's talking to my dad that has a sound mind, but his body's quitting. 60 years old, telling him, this is what we're gonna do. We're gonna take you home and this is how we're gonna take care of you. And I'm just sitting there listening to the conversation and I freaking lose it. I just step out into the hallway, man, and I'm losing my freaking marbles. How can this be going on? He's talking to me just like I'm talking to you, you know? And so that was on a Thursday. So Friday, we bring him home. They dope him all up because he's in a lot of pain, and they put him in an ambulance, and I ride with him in the ambulance to my mom's house, you know, and I get to hold his hand the whole time, you know, and we get him set up in the house and get him set up in the house. On Saturdays, a little bit out of it. Sunday, the medication's worn off and he's there, he's coherent. And the whole family is there, and I know there's a God. If you don't believe, that's fine, but I believe. Because on Sunday, he sat there and he had the best day. He had the best day, he talked with us, the grandkids were there, everybody was there. You know, it was freaking amazing. We had a great day. You know, Monday evening, the hospice nurse comes in and tells my mom and I that here's your options. He's in a lot of pain, so we either need to medicate him so he's not in pain, or he's going to be in a lot of pain, but he'll be coherent. And my mom says, we want him medicated because we don't want him in any pain, you know. So that was on a Monday night, and then Wednesday morning he passed away, you know, and it was just freaking devastating. It was tough. It was hard for me, you know. It was really hard for me. And I'll tell you what, I came home for a couple of days, or for like a day, and then we went back and they had his funeral. It was down in Pacific Palisades, and I'm struggling at the funeral. My whole family is, but I look up there on the hill, and there's like five people from Alcoholics Anonymous standing up there that had come down to support me, you know, and I was just like, I was just convinced, man, I need these freaking people all the time. You know what I mean? I need them way more than they need me. You know, and it just taught me that we can walk through anything here. As long as I'm willing to share with you what's really going on with me, we can walk through anything. You know, and I'm just so grateful for that. Real quick, my life is good today. My life is full. My wife, the girl that didn't really like me most of the time, we've been married for, well, we've been together for, oh my gosh, 27 years. We've been married since 2001. We have a great life. I've had the same job for 25 years. So I was there for 3 years while I was drinking. You know, so I've had the same job. I got these two beautiful kids. I was able to raise a stepdaughter, you know, and I've got grandkids. And that's what my life's about today. It's all about family for me. You know, from at some point it went from all of that outside stuff, the motorcycles, the cars, you know, whatever, to an inside job. And I'm so, so grateful. You know, I absolutely love Alcoholics Anonymous. I love you people and thank you for everything you've done for me.
Let's give Joe another round, huh?